All right, we are live. And before I bring Ruby on, I just have a few announcements to make. So as of yesterday, the end of COVID free viewing period is complete. And that doesn't mean you still can't get access. And all you have to do is go to theendofcovid.com and just click to get lifetime access. I believe you click the page that says purchase. And I promise you, based on the feedback we've been getting for it, it is absolutely worth it. This is a paraphrased quote, but Dr. Edith said something to the effect of she's been in the holistic health space for, you know, nearly 20 years, and she's never seen this amount of material packed together in one place that is that impactful. So of course I'm biased because I'm the lead producer for it, but I highly, highly, highly recommend checking it out. And then the other announcement is that Dr. Edith and I will be holding a 6-week journey called Super Wellness that is essentially taking everything that you will have learned and unlearned during the end of COVID and distilling it down into a 6-week course offering practical solutions. You can find information about that in the show notes, and that will begin on August 22nd. So if you would like to join us for Super Wellness, which I highly recommend, I've personally taken a few of Dr. Edith's courses, and they're always incredible. And now I have the opportunity to lead one with her, which I'm really excited about. And then the third announcement is we have just launched, as of a couple of days ago, our new membership for The Way Forward. And I'm really excited about this. It's been a long time coming, but you can pay what you want to be a member. And that's the best part. And it allows you the opportunity to connect with like-minded men and women near you. You just type in your zip or postal code and set a radius, and it'll populate anyone within that radius. And we have a marketplace where we have partnered with several companies, I think like 50 different companies who have courses, products, just all these holistic health goodies. And we have the best deals that you'll find anywhere on all those things. And then of course, our business directory. And you get all of that by paying what you want. So you pay what you want to be a part of our membership. And of course, if you support what I do and support this podcast, I really appreciate anyone who signs up to become a member. And then the last thing I'll say before bringing on Ruby, I'm on day 13 of a 21-day water fast. Well, technically day 14. So it's 21 days, but the first day was juice, 16 days water, followed by 4 days juice. So I'm on day 14 right now, day 13 of only water. So if my brain stops working at any point during this, I'm just going to stop talking and allow Ruby to do all the talking. So without further ado, here is Ruby. Ruby, thank you so much for joining me. How are you today?
Alec, thank you for having me. I'm doing great. I am incredibly excited for our conversation and to see where this conversation flows.
Yeah, I'd been following you for a while, and I like a lot of the content you put out. And then I came across something that you said about plant medicines. And, you know, we both live in the Austin area. I think you're in the Austin area too, right? Yeah. You're here there part of the time. Sometime you're in Montana, or is that just like a vacation?
Montana is where our family cabin is.
Okay. Well, yeah,
we're pretty much here full time.
Yeah. So yeah. My dad lives in Crested Butte, Colorado. So I'm in Crested Butte, Colorado right now. So yeah. It's good to escape the Austin extreme heat. It's been like absurdly hot lately. Yeah. So, but I came across a video you were talking about with plant medicine, and given that we both live in the Austin community, what you said struck a chord in me. And I'm someone who's never done any plant medicine except for shrooms. And that wasn't in a very like intentional way, you know. You know, there is times I've done it in nature by myself, but it wasn't like a guided journey or anything like that. But I've never done ayahuasca combo. I don't think this is a plant medicine, but a lot of people in Austin do this too. 5-MeO-DMT. But all these plant medicines, and I feel like it's just the sense that I get, and I couldn't point to it, is that all of the intention is being taken out of it. So when I came across your video, I was like, oh my God, this speaks so truly to me, even as someone who's never done them, but it's just, everyone is calling themselves a shaman. Everyone is serving these medicines. I know multiple people who've had like 1 to 2 year long states of psychosis after doing these medicines because they weren't guided properly. They weren't in the right setting, right intention, et cetera, et cetera. So I think it's appropriate though, to open this up with you just sharing your journey and then what led you to plant medicine.
Yeah. So my journey with plant medicine, began in 2018. I have a past with addiction. So I'm a former addict. I became fully sober in 2014. And that was actually when ayahuasca started showing up in my life. I started seeing articles coming into my inbox. More conversations were taking place about this around me. But I was so fresh into my sobriety that I didn't want to get, quote unquote, hooked onto something else.
Yeah.
It took a few years for me to actually say yes. And in 2018, I said yes because at that time, I was being told by holistic medicine practitioners, Eastern medicine, that a lot of what I was navigating, there wasn't really a cure per se. Mm. I had said goodbye to Western medicine a long time ago because that is actually how I became an addict. So,
yeah, that's not an uncommon story,
right?
Either.
So when my naturopaths and other holistic providers were saying, well, we don't know, like, here are some tools that might be able to help you, I didn't want to take that as the answer. So I was suffering from something called PMDD. A lot of women deal with this, but mine had reached a pivotal point where I was having suicidal ideation, dealing with depression, like really deep depression 2 weeks out of the month. I would wake up in the middle of the night with panic attacks. I had brain fog, memory loss. I could be talking to you right now and totally forget your name.
Wow.
So it was crippling me and it was crippling my business. And there wasn't anything that could actually help. So that's when I said yes to ayahuasca and sat in my first ceremony, which I will say that very first ceremony I sat in, actually the first three ceremonies I sat in, were not the healthiest of ceremonies. The first two, I was told it was ayahuasca. It wasn't. The third one, wasn't held. The space wasn't held, in a sacred way. So I ended up leaving that ceremony with PTSD, I kept going back because there was something, there's a familiarity with the medicine itself. Mm-hmm. And I was really dedicated to finding someone who could facilitate this in a way that felt reverent to its lineage. Mm. And that really spun me into my journey with ayahuasca, which introduced me then to Combo. So ayahuasca is what connected me to Combo. And that's how I really healed PMDD, like fully healed it. And I quickly after that ended up in Peru less than a year after first sitting with ayahuasca on American soil. And in Peru, I did my first master plant dieta, which is when you diet the plants and the master trees for much longer than a weekend. So I was there for 2 weeks dieting the medicine. And when you're
dieting the medicine, what does that mean?
Yeah. So a traditional Shipibo is a tribe. Mm-hmm. Found in Peru. And so there's different cultures of ayahuasca in Brazil, mm-hmm. and Peru. And so this is the specific culture that I decided to sit with. And they do master plant dietas. And so in conjunction with the ayahuasca, you're also prescribed another medicinal plant or tree.
Got it.
And those are prescribed to you depending on what it is that you're navigating in life. And then when you go on a dieta, that means you're dieting a lot of things. So you're dieting a lot of food. So you're not allowed to have sugar, salt, fats, any sort of herbs, spices. So you're basically,
you have like natural sugars, right? You can have fruit.
No. So there's only like one tree that allows you to have certain types of fruit, but you're not really having any fruit. So you're just eating like boiled yuca, boiled potatoes, boiled plantains, boiled rice. And so you're dieting all of that, your body starts to break down and it makes it easier. This is what they say. It makes it easier for the medicines then to work on you because your body is literally just breaking down. You have no salt. I mean, it's a lot. And then you're dieting, basically everything you take in. The input. So you're being really cautious of what you're reading and listening to. You're limiting your conversations with people. Obviously no sex and also no sexual thoughts. So you have to be mindful of your thoughts. You're cutting out distractions and you're basically just sitting with the plants and the medicine. You're drinking ayahuasca every other night. You're drinking on the off nights, a concoction of your master plant or master tree tea. And it's a very, very intense experience. And yet that is where I truly found my desired path and way to work with this medicine, was to sit in the Amazon jungle and really cultivate a deep relationship with her and understand a little more of where she's from. So that really spun me into this journey where I stand today. And ayahuasca is one of my greatest teachers. I loved combo so much that I decided to become a practitioner to help other people. I've sat with psilocybin, ayahuasca, bufo, basically all of the organic plant-based or amphibian-based medicines is what I prefer. I do not work with synthetics, nor will I sit with synthetics.
Like ketamine. I feel like ketamine is becoming ketamine, such a fad now, and that's kind of scary.
We can talk about that. I mean, ketamine or like 5-MeO. So bufo is 5-MeO-DMT. The synthetic is just the DMT, which you smoke. I won't touch that. And that's just my preference. If someone feels good doing the synthetics, okay, cool. But I prefer to work with the organic earth-based medicines and not the synthetic man-made medicines.
So a question that I have is that you keep referring to ayahuasca as a she, right? And so as you are cultivating this relationship with the medicine, is this something, because I hear this a lot, right? And I get what it means. I get what you mean by she. And of course, there's some people who literally say they meet Mother Ayahuasca or they meet Pachamama during their ceremonies, right? When you're talking about she, what exactly do you mean by that?
So in all indigenous tribal cultures, the medicines that they work with are associated with spirits. Ayahuasca is associated with the grandmother spirit. Any sort of cactus-based medicine is referred to as a grandfather-based spirit. Tobacco is also a male spirit. Psilocybin is El Niños, which is like the children, which is why it's really great for inner child work, any sort of like inner child therapy. So each medicine has a spirit, and I believe it's because of how the medicines work and what they feel like. Like as soon as I said psilocybin is El Niño, the children, you were like, yeah, that makes sense.
Totally makes sense.
Totally makes sense, right? Yeah. It helps you connect to your inner child. It helps you connect to like the joy. And ayahuasca is grandmother, but she's like the firm, I'm going to kick your ass and I'm going to love you through all of this type of grandmother.
And when you had that like dieting experience, forgive me if I'm saying it incorrectly, but what were those individual ceremonies like what was the most profound thing you experienced, or was it the continual journey itself?
So I've done 4 dietas in total, 3 in the jungle, all of which were 2 weeks of me being in the jungle with different medicines. And the first time I went in 2019, at that point in time when I had just started sitting with ayahuasca, I was a different person, completely different. And ayahuasca told me in a ceremony on U.S. soil that I would be in Peru in November 2019. Sure enough, I ended up there.
Wow.
The moment I got, like when we got into the city, I flew into Lima, then flew into Pucallpa, which is a small harbor town. From there, you take a 5-hour boat ride up the Ucayali River, which is like that Amazon River that everyone sees, the winding one. 5 hours up into the depths of the jungle. When we got off that boat and I looked around, I was like, what the fuck am I doing?
like where am I right where now? I'm
like super type A personality, super control freak. Oh my God. Here's a hut that they
Canadian living
in
LA. And now I'm like here. Yeah.
It was just, and then they show me my mattress, which is in my hut, and the entire mattress is covered in mold, and the mattress just goes on the ground. There's nothing in there. You have like a little desk. There's rats and spiders the size of your hand. And then there's this like super vicious snake that you got to watch out for. Like, it is intense. Yeah. So for me, the environment alone was a massive ceremony of me letting go of control and surrendering to what is. Mm-hmm. Then add to that, that the electricity only runs from 6 to 9 p.m. And that's really just if you need to charge things. You don't keep your lights on, because if you put a light on, all the bugs come into your tombo.
Wow.
So you're basically walking around with a headlamp, and the night sky is so thick and so dark, like you cannot see a few feet in front of you. It's that dark. And when it's raining, there could be upwards of like a foot of rain on the ground. So with that said, without the medicine, I was getting my ass kicked. Mm. And then when I started drinking the medicine, first of all, drinking the brew in the jungle tastes so different, so hard to swallow. There's no fridge, so they just keep it out and it ferments every day. It was really
interesting. You think that's how it's supposed to be though? Like,
yes,
because that was one of the questions that I had, right? Is that, is it best to do or to sit with ayahuasca when you are in the location that they actually cultivate the two different plants required for it?
I love this question, because ideally I would like to say yes. Mm-hmm. And because of the takeover of these villages and these spaces in Peru and Brazil, there are a lot of places where it can be really dangerous to sit with a medicine, because there are shamans, maestros that also are into the black magic. And there's like,
and you don't know until you have to have a strong intuitive sense before you sit. Yeah.
And most people don't know. Yeah. So ideally yes and no. Most of the medicine is sourced from South America and then Hawaii. Mm.
Okay.
I know in Australia they grow some, but Hawaii and Peru. And on U.S. soil, I know that they do cater a bit more to the taste. Mm-hmm. So they might add a little more of the vine, which is sweeter. Mm-hmm. So they kind of manipulate the brews to tend more to the westernized view of what psychedelics should be. However, with that said, every tribe in South America also has their own version of the brew. Mm-hmm. Like traditionally, it's going to be the chicrina leaf and the ayahuasca vine put together. But then a lot of different tribes will incorporate other things. In Brazil, they use yahe, which is a different type of brew. So it is made differently wherever you're from. What matters is the person who is making the medicine, that they are doing so with prayer and with intention. So if you actually look at real traditional reverent medicine makers, they are literally praying into the medicine the whole day while it's
so much intention going into it. You know, like what comes up for me is I watched a short documentary, I forget exactly what it was, 2 years ago, of this dude who struggled with intense depression. Then he went to Peru to try to, either went to Peru or Brazil, I don't remember, but he went to one of those two countries to try to sit with ayahuasca. And it literally looked like in this big city that he landed in, what you would typically, have you been in New York City?
Yeah.
Okay. You know, when like people are just like shoving stuff in your face, go to this Broadway show, go to this, buy my mixtape, just shoving stuff in your face constantly. It was like that, except for, hey, I have an ayahuasca ceremony. And it's like, even in those locations, it's being bastardized.
Yep. And you can go into like restaurants in Peru and they're selling ayahuasca by the bottle. Buy it in the markets. Yep. It's intense. And I saw that documentary actually. I can't remember the name of it either, but that was really interesting.
And he sat with a few different shaman. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, as unfortunately, like as a female, it's much more dangerous for sure. much more dangerous for females. So I've had like several females reach out to me saying, hey, do you recommend a place in Peru? And I'm like, I do. And I recommend that you go with a guide, you know, with someone who knows the space, who knows where they're going, because a lot of women are taken advantage of in those types of spaces and scenarios. And then again, you have the addition of black magic. So as we speak in this world that we're living in these weird times, like we have the light and the dark, we have the good and the evil. And in the medicine space, you see that. It's like a visceral experience of good and evil, which also means that the maestros, the shamans, they can wander into both realms, and some actually wander and remain in the darker evil realms. And so you end up with like witches and brujas and people who are literally just using the medicine for their own ill intentions, which impacts the people in the spaces. So people can get cursed. People can fall really ill. And this is like a real thing. People fall into psychosis. And that's a thing too. Cause when you go to Peru, say you go to Peru and you wander and you're like, I'm just going to go sit with this maestro. I've heard good things about him, but you don't speak the language, right? Like most of like in the Shipibo tribes, you'll be lucky if people speak Spanish. They speak Shipibo. It's a totally different language. So how are you supposed to communicate? They also, in their culture, they don't have like the prescriptions that we have. They don't have the ailments that we deal with in our society. And so if you're on some sort of like antidepressants, if you're on any sort of medication, if you have heart issues, like that, you can't translate that to them.
Yeah.
And that's when you end up in really dangerous situations.
So it's much better to go if you're already tapered off all of those things.
Well, you have to be off of all MAOIs. Yeah.
Yeah. That would make sense. So I want to like set the baseline, especially for those who are tuning into this on, I think most people understand what goes into ayahuasca. Actually, let's start there. Let's start with like, what is ayahuasca? Then let's go, what is combo? And then for the sake of this also, what is bufo?
Okay. So ayahuasca and bufo are psychedelics. Combo is not. Okay. So let's start with that.
Okay.
Ayahuasca is a brew that is made traditionally, like I said, every tribe has their own version of this, but it's traditionally made with the ayahuasca vine, which is like this vine that grows in the jungle, and then chacruna leaves. And interestingly enough, these two things do not grow beside each other in the jungle. They grow in two completely different areas of the jungle.
Can you pause there real quick? Because this is so cool. I was listening to a podcast like 5 years ago where this scientist went to Peru and like very materialism based, like probably agnostic or atheist scientist. And he was trying to get a sense of how they knew which plants to use. And the shaman was like, the spirit of the jungle told me. And he's like, okay, haha, like no, for real. And he's like, no, seriously, like the spirit of the jungle told us which ones we're supposed to put together.
Yeah. So we can't really tell exactly when ayahuasca was first birthed. It's been centuries. It's been decades. It's been in use for a long time. And say, for example, I asked that question to my maestro, he'll just say, oh, we knew. Because it just goes so far back in the history. Rumors say, here are the several rumors. One is, yes, the plants communicated it. Two is like aliens came down and told you what to do. Those are the two main rumors.
Three, it could be trial and error of a dude just being like, hey, you sacrifice yourself and try a bunch of this stuff. Okay, that dude died. Let's try someone else now.
Exactly. Yeah. But the fact remains that these two different plants grow in different parts of the jungle. So something told them to put the two together, or something told them to beat down the vine, to add the leaves, to boil it for 8 to 10 hours, and then to drink it. And traditionally, ayahuasca in the past by most tribes would only be used by the shaman, the maestro, or the maestra. So they would drink it, and you would go to them and they would tell you what they see, and they would heal you. But now it's become this thing where they drink and everyone in the space drinks. As ayahuasca is a psychedelic, I do want to emphasize that you will also you can also experience a lot of somatic, you can also have a lot of somatic experiences in the body.
A lot of people purge too, right? Like,
yes, a lot of people purge as well. And there's, it's like the Western society has this obsession with purging. I could do a whole rant on this. Yeah, as
especially
well.
I know people who do combo just to purge.
Exactly. We can talk about that. Let's put a pin in it for now. Yeah. But for, I will say that you can't just purge all your demons into a bucket and be healed. That's not how this works. Okay. So the purge is really like, with ayahuasca, traditionally what they say is that's ayahuasca working to help remove a lot of the ailments, the fears, the beliefs, whatever it is that you need to bring out, which is why when you're in an experience, usually when the purge does come, not everyone purges, but when the purge does come, it's usually at this like super intense moment and you finally feel yourself releasing something or letting go. And then the purge just comes out. With that being said, there's a lot of you can experience a lot of visuals and you can experience like somatic feelings. For me, I tend to release a lot of old trauma that's been stored in my body. So I'll actually go through like shakes. My body will shake. It doesn't do this anymore.
That's what animals do, though. That's
right.
What's
well,
crazy
that's what we're supposed to do.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, if you think about it, I'm just going to detour for a second. Like in hospitals, when you see like in for example, TV shows with emergency room, if someone starts shaking after an accident, they hold them down, they pin them down, they give them a shot of something to knock them out. That actually is what creates stored trauma.
That's also what they do at psych wards when people are experiencing that too. Yeah.
So a lot of people will experience somatic things like that where, you know, ayahuasca is an intelligent being. If you believe and the fact that like nature has its own intelligence, then what you're drinking has its own intelligence and it works with you to help. Bufo is amphibian. So it's a toad medicine. It's the secretion of a toad. And it is 5-MeO-DMT, which is a psychedelic. It's a very short experience. So ayahuasca can go, if you drink a cup, you can expect to be in it anywhere between like 5 to 8 hours.
Does it feel timeless though?
It feels like timeless. And also it feels like time just speeds by. Like you'll come out of it and you'll be like, holy shit, that was like 8 hours.
Wow.
Whereas Bufo, you smoke it and it can last anywhere from like 5 minutes to maybe 20, 25 minutes. It's really quick. And with Bufo, I like to call it God's breath. It really helps you connect to divinity, to the frequency of God, to the frequency of source. Most people, when they sit with Bufo, will say the same thing. I feel more connected with nature. I feel more connected to God or whatever their word is for the higher source. And so with Bufo, you're more in the light energy. Whereas with ayahuasca, you're more in the earth, in the roots, in the traumas, in the, you know, the traumas.
So it's more
of
facing your shadow in that respect. Yeah, got it.
Yes. Yeah. And then we have combo, which is I call it a physical ordeal medicine, because that's exactly what you're going through, is a physical ordeal. I also like to call it the original peptide injection, because peptide injections have become all the rage these days. Well, guess what? Combo is a secretion of a frog, and that secretion contains dozens upon dozens of bioactive peptides and neuropeptides. And combo is legal. It's one of the medicines that is legal in most countries. I think Australia is the only one as of right now that it is not.
Crazy that any of these are illegal. And then there's like another side of me, despite being a voluntarist / anarchist and like despising the government's authority and not believing in it, that's like, maybe this serves a good purpose right now, especially with the neo shamanistic culture, which we'll talk about in a second.
Right. Exactly. So combo is basically just an inoculation of peptides. But it's a very, very intense experience. It's 20 minutes from the time the dots come on to the time the dots come off.
Can you explain how they do it too? It's like,
So you come in fasted, no water, no food. And what I would do is I would first, we'd pick the area. Usually it's shoulders or just behind the shoulders or the ankles. And we'll burn open what's called the gates. And that's like the dots. For those of you watching the video, you can see like these are some more fresh dots that I've done.
Yeah, let me zoom in on you. Hold on. I want to see like so you can see that better. There. I got to click you. There we go.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
okay.
And it's on the wrist for me because these ones were self-administered. So, it's just easier for me to do this. And so we open up the gates with a incense stick. It's just an all natural incense stick. I gently tap the skin. It's kind of like if you were to touch a hot stove and you get that blister.
Got it.
And then you remove the blister and there's a shiny, your shiny skin. That's all we're doing. And then the combo comes, I wish I had a stick here. The combo, when they collect it, they collect the secretion and they spread it onto like a stick and then they dry the stick. And then that's what I use. Also very important, your combo practitioners know where their stick is sourced. Most people just buy online. I buy from my tribal detox family, which we actually support the Kokoma tribe. We support the tribes that actually collect our combo. So we know where our combo is coming from. So it's dried. We add some water just to reactivate the combo. In the jungle, they spit on the stick. We add water and then it bubbles up and then it turns into like a little paste. And we put those pastes into little dots and we place them on the open gates. From that point on, you're in the combo experience. And most people will experience first a heating sensation in their body because there's peptides in the combo that are dilating your blood vessels and increasing circulation. So you'll experience the heat. You'll experience maybe your heart palpitations. So your heart will start to race. Again, it's increasing blood flow, increasing circulation. And then you'll hit this like peak moment where you're just really hot. Your heart's racing, then everything comes down. You start to feel like you have a really, really bad flu. So that's when the blood pressure goes down. So you go from really high blood pressure to low, not dangerously so, but it's a big shift.
Yeah.
And you'll start to feel cold, clammy. And at this point, the brain actually reads the combo as like a toxin. It's telling your gut, hey, we need to purge this out. We can't have this in the body. It can also become overstimulated, which also creates a purge. And so if people are going to purge, this is when they purge. But combo is not about the purge. I want to say that again. Combo is not about the purge, okay? It's about the peptides and what the peptides can do for you. So from the moment the combo is applied, the peptides go to work. Mm-hmm. And so if people purge, they purge. Some people purge south, which is common in ayahuasca as well. And then after that, you're just kind of chill. And then the dots come off at the 20-minute mark. You take a little nap and you feel great. Combo is really good for anxiety, depression. It's great for things like diabetes, mold, and Lyme. It really helps people suffering from mold and Lyme. It helps regulate hormones, regulate cycles. I've had clients get pregnant right after sitting with combo. It does a lot. It adds, it gives you stamina. It helps you focus, helps you feel more clear in the head. And, you know, there's only it's mostly just like some heart conditions and a few other things that combo is not good for.
Yeah. Contraindications.
But, right. But your practitioner, if they're educated and they're serving with reverence, they should know all of this.
That's a big if.
Right. And so that's why I always say, like, look for trained practitioners, especially with Cambo, because Cambo, I mean, there's people who are training people in a day or in a 2-day training. Whereas, like the training I did with tribal detox, that's 10 days. You're like training for 10 days. You're learning about the medicine. We're going through safety precautions. We know how to give CPR. We know everything, the ins and outs. So for anyone interested, you can just go to Tribal Detox's website and look for a practitioner in your state. We're almost in every state. Getting there. But I really love combo. I think most people drift towards psychedelics because they want the downloads and the visions.
Yeah.
But if you're dealing with something physical or you have depression that just won't lift or anxiety, like honestly, combo is so, so potent.
Well, that makes sense too, because from what I'm learning, the body is basically the subconscious mind. And I learned that from, well, Joe Dispenza's work, but then also a good friend of mine, Kyle Troutman, who has High Vibe Healing. The body is the subconscious mind. So when you have these repetitive programs and the mind is creating the body and you're obsessing over them, perpetuating them, it's literally stuck in the body. So if you, you know, do something like combo, that can help lift it out of the body to some degree.
Yeah. And the other thing is that, like, the job of the peptide, because we hear that term a lot, the job of a peptide is to remind your cells how to communicate. So they help your cells communicate effectively. When we have dis-ease or disorder or dysfunction in our bodies, for whatever reason, whether it's just environmental toxins, which all of us are subjected to every day now, or toxins in our food, or you've actually had dis-ease, there's going to be some disharmony. Your cells are going to start to go dormant. They're going to start to be a little more sluggish. And so when you get combo and you get that inoculation of peptides, it reawakens your dormant cells. It also reminds your cells, like, hey, this is how you're supposed to communicate with each other. And then the cells get all of the systems of the body going again. So it's like a nice reset or a reboot for your body and for your systems to work as they should.
The question that I want to get to now, and I'm going to think of how to frame this, is, like, given what you just shared about combo, becoming a practitioner, it takes like 10 days. And I would imagine you had further study beyond that to really come into relationship with this medicine. And then, you know, ayahuasca shamans probably do it for a freaking lifetime to cultivate that relationship with the plant and with the spirit. So let's talk about neo-shamanistic culture, because that was a word that really piqued my interest that you used in your video, and I've seen you say it elsewhere now too. So what is neo-shamanistic culture?
So with the rise of psychedelics again, you know, we're in what is now being called the third wave of psychedelics.
Yeah. It's like the 60s on steroids or on acid.
However, we are doing it a little bit better. But there's a popularity in psychedelics, and a lot of people are seeing the potential for healing. Neo-shamanistic culture is like LA is a hub for this. Austin is becoming a hub for this.
Sedona, Bali.
It's like everyone knows a shaman.
Yeah.
You know, like the person that used to be a coach last year and now they're a shaman. It's when people choose to serve the medicine, but they haven't really been initiated. And I've had so much pushback when I say talk about initiations. Traditionally with ayahuasca, the initiation is really long. I mean, several years, if not a decade. And you actually have to go through, depending on the tribe, go through different types of initiations. There's this one initiation that our maestro in Peru told us about, and how he had to get the whisker of a jaguar. And in order to do that, he had to make himself invisible. Like, there's crazy stories like that.
Which all have an intention to some degree, I would bet. Like, they're not just like, hey, let's fuck with these guys that are trying to become shamans too. There's something to that that has a deeper meaning that maybe even you and I don't understand that applies to them being able to be a shaman.
It's learning how to work with the medicine and learning how to hold space for the medicine, learning how to hold space for the people in the space with you. So when I say initiation, I don't even necessarily mean it has to be like this 10-year or what our, you know, old maestros used to do back in the day, because we are obviously living in a different time. We are a different culture. However, it feels like the reverence is lost, where people are now going into these like westernized ayahuasca certification programs that are popping up in the jungle left, right, and center, where they just go for 3 months, become certified, and now they've got the certificate that deems them as a shaman. And Sure. I'm
which is so crazy that there's a certificate, like I'm a certified shaman now for ayahuasca, which is like, that's not a thing.
Yeah. Like you learn about the plants for sure. You learn about their properties for sure. You learn about how to make the medicine for sure. But to learn how to hold space in that realm in 3 months, that's impossible.
Yeah, I mean, you were there for like almost 3 months or something like that in total, right? And it's like,
I mean, in total, yeah. And I'm nowhere. I will never call myself a shaman.
Yeah,
I am a student of ayahuasca for life. I'm choosing not to serve her because I say that now. But
well, you understand what it takes though, too, right?
Yeah,
because like I would imagine, yes, they learn about the plant. They might like do some meditative practices to cultivate a relationship, sit in ceremonies themselves, like maybe shadow someone who's a shaman leading a ceremony, stuff like that. But are you really cultivating a relationship with the plant and with, more importantly, the spirit of the plant?
Yes. And are you equipped? Like, do you have the ability to remain so focused in the space that you are able to oversee every single person in the room, plus clear the energy? Because again, like psychedelics really open you up to these different realms. And so it welcomes a lot of things. Like I've seen a lot of crazy, scary shit in ceremony spaces. I've seen entities, I've seen people and their entities hooked on their backs. I've seen like people stripped down naked and have like these complete psychotic breaks. I've seen a lot of things. And you have to know what to do in those situations, especially because if one person is, for example, having some sort of break, that's going to impact every single other person in the space. And then it becomes a really dangerous space to hold. So the neo-shamanistic culture, I believe, in my opinion, these are the people who are doing it for power, right? They're doing it for ego. They see this cup as like, they drink it once or twice and they're like, oh my God, I feel so good. I want to help other people feel good, but they're doing it from this egoic place where they don't understand that they actually have to cultivate this relationship with the brew. Instead, they're like, come sit with me, drink this. I'm going to heal you. And that's not the case. Like you are not doing the healing.
Well, I feel like that comes from a very like stereotypical Western mindset of like, go, 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 leaving the intention and reverence and deep connection out of it. And it's all just based in the material element. And I think like, you know, I'm not going to name names, but there are so many podcasts now who talk about ayahuasca and I think aren't careful with how they communicate it. They're just like, oh yeah, it was incredible for me. And like, I highly recommend you go see a shaman type thing. And then people, like you said, go sit with it for 2 days. They have this Western mindset. And then they themselves had experienced depression, anxiety, guilt, shame, some form of trauma that they couldn't get rid of that helped resolve a little bit with ayahuasca. And then they're like, oh, it comes from an innocent place of wanting to help give this to other people. But then because the trauma space is getting more attention, and this is something I want to get into later, I almost feel like the Western neo-shamanistic culture approach is coming from a place of materialism, of, I don't think capitalism's bad, but I think exploitation because this industry is popping up so quickly. But then also like coming from a place of spiritual bypass almost in a way.
Yeah. The magic button. Here's the magic button. Yeah. It's in a cup. And yeah, I agree with the materialism, with it's the power. It's like this real, people forget that it's actually really easy to fall into the trap of wanting to be a guru.
Yeah.
You know, yes, and we see it so much in social media with the influencership. I mean, that's basically essentially the same as like pedestaling yourself as calling yourself a guru, you know? Yeah. And it's easy for us to all fall into that trap. And when you have the medicine and psychedelics involved, then you have people who are coming to you with trauma, people who are desperate, people who are in need of something, and they see you as the holder of the key. Of course, it's going to lift you up and make you feel powerful and make you feel like the savior. And so it just creates this really weird energy and frequency for the space to be held. And plus, I mean, I have heard of people sitting in groups of like 75 attendees. And wow. I'm just like, how in the hell are the facilitators holding space for that? And the truth is they're not, you know, they're not. And so we're seeing like very large gatherings because again, like more bang for your buck. And the space holding isn't there. And so people are leaving feeling traumatized. I have met so many people who come to me having their traumas retriggered or with new traumas after working with medicine because they've sat in really leaky containers with people who are unable to hold the space. And that's dangerous. Like this work is here to help us heal. And yet the way it's being abused and glorified is actually creating more trauma.
Yeah.
And I really honestly believe it comes down to that feeling of power because at the end of the day, every human being, due to our basic human needs, we want to feel significant. But there's a fine line between feeling significant and feeling powerful and egoic. And that's where things get a little bit blurry. And, you know, unfortunately, a lot of people then become victims to those types of spaces. So when I say reverence with the plant medicine space, it really just comes down to like respect the lineage, respect the medicine that you're working with, and do it for the right reasons with deep intention, which we're not seeing. And an example of that is Bufo. And I don't know if you've talked to a lot of people who have done Bufo, but Bufo is really easy to have like a psychedelic.
I actually know someone who's had a very bad experience with Bufo recently.
Yeah. Because the way that it is taught is you give blast off doses. And that's traditionally what you see Bufo as. Like you take a dose and you blast
off. It's a high dose that you blast off and you're like out of your body and in the etheric realms for some time and then back down. Yeah.
Okay. That in itself creates trauma because your ego is, as much as ego gets a bad rap, your ego is needed. Your ego is what anchors you into the here and now and into this
body. It
gives
you identity. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So when your soul, let's just call it your soul, is shot out of your body, it's traumatic for the ego. So a lot of people are left feeling broken, feeling like they're in pieces, feeling like they're unable to like piece back together the fabric of who they are. And that's really common with Bufo. And so for example, when I serve Bufo, I serve smaller doses. I start people off on micros and we work our way up to just cultivate, cultivate a relationship. Why would you want to sit with a medicine and be taken by it? You know, but again, like that's how these medicines are painted. Like ayahuasca, it's all about this psychedelic experience. And I get these downloads and she taught me how to run my business. And like, I did ayahuasca and then I acquired a $1 million client. Like we hear all these stories.
Yeah.
And when I first sat with ayahuasca, I mean, I will tell you like my first 20 ceremonies were really fucking hard. Mm-hmm. I never got like the fireworks and the glory and all of that, but I kept going back because she kept showing me more of my shadows and more of my trauma. She was really helping me lift the veils to see what it was that I get to work on. And I think those types of conversations aren't being had enough, like the reality of working with these medicines. So I agree. Like, I think there's a lot of people out there preaching about ayahuasca and other medicines as if it's this beautiful experience. And like, sorry, folks, it's not always a beautiful experience.
Well, do you think that it's, a lot of it has to do with, I think this is a rhetorical question, but I want to hear your thoughts on it. The intention in which you approach sitting with ayahuasca or Bufo or any of this stuff, because there's a distinct difference between approaching it like, oh, I'm struggling. I want to fix everything, or I need a quick fix, right? Like I want to do ayahuasca because I want a quick fix. I've heard these other stories versus what it sounds like yours was. It's like, I really need to face myself. Like I'm at a point right now where I've gone through these addictive cycles and I was a mess for a while and I really, really want to face myself so I can be better.
Intention makes a huge impact. Mm-hmm. I always tell clients, no matter what they're sitting with me, I always say, this is not the answer. This is a tool. Just like
to show you the answer, maybe to show you the answer that you have to do.
But it's also, you have to, it's a co-created environment. So if you're in ayahuasca, you are in ceremony with ayahuasca. You're working with ayahuasca. She's not doing all the work for you. She never will. Same with Bufo, same with Combo. Like, you have to be present in the experience, and then you have to take what you received in those experiences and integrate it into your life. And that's all you, you know, that's not the medicine doing the work. That's all you. So the intention does matter. Your participation matters. And I will emphasize, like, the space holders, the facilitators, that matters a lot.
Yeah. So I've done, like I said, I've only done psilocybin before. And I have had some profound experiences. In fact, like, doing shrooms by myself one time. And of course I didn't like do a guided journey. It could have been a much, much better, but nonetheless, it was a profound experience where I had the feeling of, oh, all things are one, just like pop into my mind. And then that led me to obsessively research all is one until I came across the law of one, which was one of the most profound materials I've ever read. But aside from that, I've done, you know, I'm on day 14 of a fast right now. I'm like, this is in and of itself. I mean, you talked about how you've done a 5-day before, almost a psychedelic experience where you're really having to face your shadow too. But there's like waves during, at least in my experience, doing this water fast right now. But the other thing that I've done is my friends, Andrew Genovese and Michelle, if you listen to this, I forget your last name, McKay. I think her last name's McKay. They're partners and they're really good friends of mine. And they've been doing guided dimensional breathwork ceremonies for a long time. And they are freaking really good at what they do. And so I've, again, never done ayahuasca, but I was doing dimensional breath work with them, guided by Andrew and Michelle, around other people who have done ayahuasca. And they said, not exactly the same, but it's almost as similar to the experience of ayahuasca. I'll give you an example. So I, you know, Kylie and I have been together since we were 16, right? Like, so she's seen all of my worst phases. And I treated her awfully early on in our relationship, like late teens, early 20s. And anytime I'm doing the work to face myself, that's always at the top of my mind. Like, oh, I made so many mistakes with my current wife. Like, how could I have hurt someone I loved? But then when I sat in this dimensional breathwork ceremony, it wasn't that. Like, that's what my mind traps like clings onto, but it was something so deep inside me as we got into this breathwork, like probably 45 minutes in, that I didn't even know was there from my childhood, but then I distinctly remembered it. So it was an experience of facing my shadow, and it felt very psychedelic. So all that to say, my question is, what does ayahuasca offer that something like dimensional breath work might not offer?
Great question. So the way I view ayahuasca and other plant or amphibian medicines is they work at the speed of the earth. And if you look at the speed of the earth, we as human beings are moving a lot faster, not because we're meant to, but because we've trained ourselves to. The earth moves slowly. It has seasons. You know, a tree won't be alive one day and dead the next day. Like, it just takes time. And so these medicines, especially ayahuasca, it teaches you to be at that pace, to match your pace. And if you think about our traumas, or I call them like the loops that we get stuck in, right? Every relationship has a pattern loop. We have our own pattern, individual pattern loops. You know, you get a trigger, you react, the reaction causes this, and then you just keep going.
Spiral.
Right. Yeah. And because we've become accustomed, we've trained ourselves to move so quickly, we don't pause. And so the loops just keep going. When you sit with something like ayahuasca, she teaches you to move a little bit more like molasses, which means that you can catch the loop. You see the trigger and then you feel yourself react, but then you can pause. And then
is this after the fact or during the ceremony?
During, after, wow. I mean,
so it has lasting effects if you really like
are present. If you really are present and you devote yourself to the integration, yes, you will see this. I mean, I've had ceremonies where my first ceremony ever, the one that gave me PTSD, was I was in my loop over and over and over again for the entire night. Wow. And I had no one helping me. So I'm not going to say that she will do this in ceremony all the time. However, when you devote yourself to cultivating a relationship with her, she will show you to move slower, to pay more attention, to become more aware, not just of the thoughts, but of the feelings in your body. And when we gain that ability to become more aware, to observe ourselves in those moments, we can pause the loop long enough to see the trauma, to see the origin story, to see all the different ways in which this is repeating itself in our lives and our participation in that loop. Mm. Breath work, certain modalities of breath work and fasting, it takes you to these other realms. And that's why I always say these realms are always available to us. It's not like we drink ayahuasca and we go into some portal into this other world where these realms exist. No, they're always here. Mm. It's just our access to them has been cut off just by the way that we have chosen to live as a society. So yeah. For example, with water fasting, I mean, I did 5 days, and by day four, I was seeing geometric patterns in the ceiling. I was like dropping into meditation and coming out an hour later feeling like it had only been 5 minutes.
Yeah.
It was insane. And it's because we are depriving ourselves of like all the food that we shove into our body that we don't necessarily need.
Which we use as coping a lot of the times, right? Too.
Food, yeah. You know, it should be used as fuel, not for stuffing our feelings. Yeah. However, when we allow ourselves to slow down enough to really connect with ourselves, we can actually tap into all these other realms around
so
us.
True.
So breath work is a tool, just like plant medicine is a tool. Fasting is a tool. So these realms are always available to us. And so for people who come and they're like, I don't feel comfortable sitting with any sort of medicine. It's like, great. How about breath work?
Mm.
You know, or fasting for those who want to venture into fasting. It just teaches you a lot about what we don't need. And what I love about fasting, like I did like 3 years of regular fasting, and that really taught me about what our vessel actually needs versus what it doesn't need. Because again, like we've been programmed to believe a lot of bullshit. If you don't believe me, watch the end of COVID. Like we've been programmed to believe like we need food. You need to eat breakfast. You need to eat this. Oh, you have a stomach ache? Eat this thing. And it's like, no, if you have a stomach ache, maybe you should fast.
Yeah.
And so when we start to unlearn those patterns, we start to drop back in to the essence of what it really means to be a human being. And what it means to be a human being is to live at the pace of the earth, is to live with harmony with the earth, in sync with the earth, to live in seasons. You know, there's a reason why we feel like we want a cocoon in winter. There is a reason for all of these things.
Mm-hmm.
And right now it just feels like we have become this society where we're living against the very structure that we're meant to live in.
I agree. Totally agree. Yeah. It's interesting because on my fast, I've felt a much greater need to just be outside. And luckily, like I'm not in Texas where it's 106 degrees and my little daughter, my kids love playing outside. My daughter's like, no, too hot. If I'm like, hey, you want to go jump on a trampoline? She's 2 and a half. She's like, no, too hot. She won't even go outside unless we go to like Barton or another lake or something like that. But yeah, I'm in Colorado right now and I just like feel the need to be outside all the time, like more than I usually do. And it's so interesting. And I feel so much more connected with myself, connected with the earth. And I think in you know, indigenous cultures, we, you know, our ancestors were kind of forced to fast a lot of the time. But of course they also did it intentionally for connection to the creator. The question that I have with respect to what you just said that kind of came up, and tell me if this makes sense, is that yes, these realms, are always available to us, and they're all around us at all times in our limited human perception, especially in the modern world where we're disconnected from nature, struggle to access them sometimes. And we can by breathwork, by fasting, by meditation, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But is it that things like ayahuasca, because there is fundamentally like an essence, a spirit, an etheric entity attached to them, that it sort of guides you into the realm without, how do I put this, without having to really work to cultivate that yourself continually. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'll say this, and this is going to be very different than how most people talk about ayahuasca. Mm-hmm. Everyone's experience is different. Every mm-hmm. time I've sat, it's a different experience. So there is not like one, like with combo, I can tell you the way I explained it is how it is for every single person that sits with it. It's yeah. very predictable. It's not like psychedelics. Ayahuasca is very unpredictable. And like in that first ceremony that I described where I was in that loop, it was almost like I was hijacked and put there and I didn't want to be there. And no matter what I did, I was fucking stuck, you know?
Didn't you say that like wasn't really ayahuasca
that,
too?
That one was actually the first time I had the real brew.
Oh, okay.
That was the third ceremony. That was the first time I had the real brew, but there wasn't anyone cleaning the space with prayer. Like it was just, I was just on my own.
Okay.
And I have been in ceremonies in Peru where it's a complete physical healing. Like I will be laid out on my mat. I cannot even sit up. I feel like my guts are all being rearranged. I'm in a lot of pain. So it's just different every time. I will say that ayahuasca will always give you what you need and not always what you want. So intention is important because intention acts as your guide. But you also have to be open to knowing that she is the highest intelligence in this relationship. So for example, if you go and you say like, I want to be shown how to make my business successful, you know, and you go in and then she might just shoot you down into the deepest, darkest traumas and you're going to come out of it like, what the fuck was that? And it's because you need to work on that in order to even entertain having the bandwidth to hold the success that you want.
So like ironically, it still helps you get
exactly
possibly the successful business thing, but just not what you thought it would be.
Exactly.
So there's intention versus expectation though.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very important, you know, because, and like I said earlier, you're not always going to get a fireworks show. It's not always going to be all these visuals. I actually don't get a lot of visuals in ceremonies. I get a lot of somatic experiences. I get a lot of messages that I will hear, and then I'll get very short bursts of visuals, whereas I know people and the whole night will be like a fireworks show for them. So it's just different.
Have you ever had a shared experience where you hear that a lot with ayahuasca ceremonies where people all see the same thing after the fact? They're like, yeah, I saw that too. Like some entity or something.
I have had, so in the circles where I act as guardian, so I'm a guardian for the medicine now.
What does that mean, guardian for the medicine?
Guardian just means like someone who is in the room to support.
Got it, cool.
So I'm not facilitating, but I'm supporting the space.
Got it.
So I will often see what people are going through. I've sat with the medicine long enough to really hone in on that so I can see what people are experiencing. But I will say 100% of the time in integration circle, you know, after the ceremony is complete and you've slept, we have integration circles, everyone will speak and there will for sure be a theme. There will for sure be some like thread that ties.
But it also matters
together.
Who you sit with too, then, like who's around, not necessarily, but like that has an impact on you. I mean, it makes sense.
I mean, I'll say, with that, since I've lived in LA and Austin, which is the new LA, a lot of people will be like, oh, I want to come sit, but who's going to be there? And for me, it's like, these spaces are the spaces where you come to get metaphorically naked. Like this is where you come to be your most raw self. Mm-hmm. And if someone shows up and they're not willing to do that, they might have enough inner strength to hold themselves back in the experience, but most people will just get knocked down.
Yeah.
Most of the time you're going to leave with a new tribe of friends. That's usually what happens because you've connected on such a deep, intimate level and you feel so seen because you got like really vulnerable in a space together. But again, like it matters on the space holder, on the facilitation, on the size of the circles. That really does come into play. So does it matter who's in the space? I think what matters most are the facilitators and how they're holding space and how they're vetting people to come into the space. So a good facilitator will do a full like medical breakdown with them, check the physical health history, check the mental health history, check on their intentions, why they're there, and be brave enough to say no if it's not the right fit.
Wow. Wow. And that's an indication of a good shaman then. Like,
yeah. Someone who really holds reverence for the space, you know, like they're not just trying to fill it with people or, or with payments. They're really curating people who are choosing to devote themselves to, whether it's this singular experience with ayahuasca or devote themselves to the path of medicine, people who have strong intentions.
I know we've talked about like the, because of the rise in popularity of psychedelics, the rise of the sort of westernized neo-shamanistic culture, but with respect to that rise in popularity of psychedelics, what are you excited about as someone who's a student of ayahuasca and a combo practitioner?
I am excited for the potential this has to heal trauma when used with reverence and responsibility. There's a lot more research being done with this third wave. A lot more people are paying attention to the research. Where a lot more people are becoming open to viewing this as a tool to support the healing process. And, you know, I think we've all heard that saying, like sitting with ayahuasca for a night is like the same as 7 years of therapy, something like that. Yes and no. And yes, because it really opens you up. It just brings you to your most vulnerable place to see the things that you haven't been willing to see. So I am most excited for its use in therapeutic settings, for its use in trauma, with trauma, with people who are struggling with trauma. That is what I'm super excited about. I'm also excited at the reconnection to the earth, specifically with the plant and amphibian medicines, not with the synthetic. Synthetics, by the way, offer a totally different experience.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you literally after this is like, what are your thoughts on ketamine as an example?
Okay. So I know people who run ketamine clinics. I also know people where ketamine has really supported them. Is it for me? No. I mean, back in the day when I was an addict and I would go to raves and stuff, like people were, would have like these balls of ketamine, powdered ketamine, and use, have long pinkies and like take this.
Oh, the long pinky nail, kind of like,
and stick it up your nose. And like people would K-hole. Like I have seen all of this. Ketamine is not something I want to fuck with. And when used in therapeutic settings with therapists present, nurses, people who can really manage the dosage, I think that, I believe that there is real
positive
hope,
effect.
Right? Yeah. For, because I know, like I know someone who's close to me who really was able to break through some stuff he wasn't able to break through with ketamine. With that being said, though, like when I first moved to Austin, there was one ketamine clinic. Now there's multiple, and some of them now don't even have therapists. Like it's just like a nurse who is administering the ketamine.
And then
someone is talking them through a journey. And it's like, that's not like, if you're going to use it in a therapeutic setting, use it in a therapeutic setting. Just like, you know,
again, like with someone who's trained to help.
Right.
To, yeah.
To help guide you. You know, and so I think that there is, because ketamine, we can do it, right? Like we technically legally can do this. So now it's becoming something that can be easily abused and misused. And I think not enough people actually are being told the dangers of a lot of the synthetics or any of these medicines, really. They're just talked, the highlights are spoken of and not the downside.
But that's kind of what I think about, like, now, again, as someone who totally thinks that everything should be legal, so to speak, as long as you're not infringing and imposing upon other people and you're abiding by the non-aggression principle, like all of it should be. And that's a conversation for another time. But coming from that position, I am at the same time, given that it has been tightly regulated, like psilocybin as an example, which seems harmless, but there are people who I know who've had a shroom trip without the right intention, without the right setting, without, you know, even those who've been guided, without the right like person guiding them, that have gone into a state of psychosis mm-hmm. afterwards, and they're like, I will never do that shit again. And I still mm-hmm. am struggling with that. I still have nightmares about it. I still have random triggers pop up in my mind that put me back in that state. And it's like, that is scary as shit.
Yeah, it's especially with the macro doses, right? And that's the obsession. It's like how Western society has the obsession with the purge. They have this obsession with the macro doses. Like, I just want to go deep and I'm going to go hard in it.
Yeah.
But the best way to work with these medicines is to cultivate a relationship, which you can only do when you start to work on micro doses and then start to work your way up. Mm. But I mean, I've witnessed people on psilocybin go into that really dark place and you can't take them out. Mm. Like, they're just in it.
Yeah.
You just have to wait it out. And for that person, it's an incredibly scary experience.
Yeah. And then they're traumatized afterwards. And that's the scary part.
Exactly. And so the potential for healing with that medicine is gone, you know?
The other thing that's like building off that's scary about it too, is that you, sometimes when you do psilocybin, you're in naturally a meditative state. So if you have a bad experience while on psilocybin and then you try to like meditate afterwards or do something that sort of like centers you, that's scary that can be re-triggering, that something that is intended to help resolve trauma can help you can cause you to be re-traumatized. That's crazy.
Yeah. If you don't know how to integrate, if you don't have someone guiding you with the integration process, it's really easy to get stuck in a place that, quite frankly, it just leaves you with a dysregulated nervous system.
Mm. Yeah. I do have a question about tobacco.
Mm.
As someone who, you know, before this water fast, I was smoking tobacco quite a bit, all organic, out of a wooden pipe that Kylie got me for mm-hmm. Father's Day, which shout out to Kylie for that. But what are your thoughts on tobacco?
So tobacco as in organic form of tobacco, leaves dried and not put into a cigarette, I'm okay with. Any and every medicine culture works with tobacco and they work with tobacco for very similar reasons. Tobacco is known as the protective spirit. Mm-hmm. So I don't smoke, but in an ayahuasca ceremony, I will always have my pipe.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm facilitating ceremonies, I will always have either my pipe or my rolled up organic tobacco smokes. Before big ceremonies, I'll also do a prayer with tobacco. Tobacco is a protective spirit, but you know, the way that I don't even know the origins of cigarettes, to be honest, but whoever came up with that and the way that it's been abused and now how it's really just like a
quick fix for anxiety.
Right.
Yep.
Filled with toxins.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, that's not how our relationship was meant to be used with tobacco. Again, like if you use things in its real raw organic plant form, that's how we are meant to work with nature, not taking this thing and then adding a bunch of synthetic toxins and then wrapping it up in some synthetic toxic material and then smoking it. That's not how it works. And so with tobacco, with intention, like you won't sit, even though I'm a ceremonialist, I'm not smoking tobacco every day. It's with deep, deep intention. There was always a prayer involved with tobacco, just like with any other.
That's a good reminder for me, because before this, like my original intention with using it was a friend of mine recommended like, hey, to really center yourself before interviews and you could like smoke tobacco a little bit. And I was like, that's great. But then over time, I was starting to abuse it as a coping mechanism for anxiety. Like, okay, like I'm a little anxious right now, but I really have to finish this project. The end of COVID has been the best teacher for me because it was so much work. Like it was insane amount of work and I probably will never do a project like that again. But I was using it as a coping mechanism for a little bit. Absolutely. I was.
Yeah. When we start to depend on something, that's when we've abused the relationship and it's not a relationship anymore.
Yep. Exactly. Well, Yeah, I don't think I had anything else to ask. Do you have anything else you want to talk about?
I mean, I could talk about all things, but
yeah, I feel like we could go on forever.
yeah. But well, no, I mean,
we'll save it for when I come and join you on your podcast then.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. We'll save it for then.
Well, do you have any closing comments then?
Yeah, for anyone who is seeking to dive into more of the sacred medicine space with plant medicines, with amphibian medicines, to just do your due diligence and interview people. You know, don't just rely on the first recommendation. Really get to know people. Ask them where they source their medicine. Ask them who they trained with. Ask them what their training was like. If they're doing this as a side gig, usually that's not a good person to sit with. And then get clear on your intentions for why you want to sit with these medicines, and be really clear on your devotion to that path. Because if your intention is to heal, then the rest of your life needs to also reflect that intention. Mm-hmm. There needs to be a real devotion to that.
Very well said. Very well said. It's not a quick fix thing. It's like, this is initiating my healing journey that I will continue on afterwards.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah, that's beautiful. This was awesome. This was a really fun episode. I hope you had fun. I did.
I did have fun.
This is great. Okay. Well, Ruby, thank you for joining me. And your website again?
It's rubyfraymon.com. And you can find me on all the social medias, although I don't tend to be there a lot. Instagram mostly.
Lately. I don't do it anymore either, really.
At I Am Ruby, currently on sabbatical, but I'll be back. And then my podcast, Potent Truth, which Alec will be on soon. And then, of course, my book, Potent Leadership. I do talk about plant medicine and leadership and just this really fucked up world that we live in. It's great.
it's funny you say that. Fucked up world that it is great, but it is. It's like a fucked up great world. It's like the best.
In
the worst way. Yeah. Worst in the best way. I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Ruby, this is great. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.